Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Make the most of your me time with sensational hair products from Method. The new range of shampoos and conditioners will leave your hair looking shiny and feeling healthy. From Pure Peace, infused with peony, rose water, and quinoa protein, to Simply Nourish, crafted with coconut, rice milk, and shea butter, and Daily Zen with calming cucumber, seaweed, and green tea. Visit methodproducts.com to unleash your inner shower with Method and reconnect with the best version of yourself.
Next up, I want to tell you about our friends at Gainswave. I have to touch on a subject that gets kind of negative press, which is erectile dysfunction. It's just a basic biology. But some of the companies, the way they offer ED solutions, they talk about it in such a way that people are left ashamed or embarrassed. The fact is, as many as 30 million males are affected by some form of erectile dysfunction. 60% at 60, 50% at 50, 40% at 40, the way we think about it. It's biological. It's beyond their control. It's not psychological. And what's more devastating is that every case of erectile dysfunction really affects two people, the man and the partner, and that can affect the relationships. It can be quite damaging. And we all know about the pharmaceutical agents that are out there. They've been helping men for over 20 years. But sometimes these treatments are inadequate or give temporary solutions, or maybe people don't want to take the medication or the side effects. That is where Gainswave may be a great option. Gainswave is a breakthrough shockwave-based treatment that addresses what may be at the root cause of erectile dysfunction, namely a buildup of arterial microplaque in the arteries to the penis. This buildup can impede the flow necessary for proper functioning. Gainswave treatment uses sound waves to break up the microplaque and improve or restore blood flow entirely. It's a non-invasive, drug-free option that is truly promising. Procedure takes about 20 minutes. It's comfortable. Most men are able to enjoy benefits the same day. Best part is Gainswave users and clinicians report 75% success rate, which is truly impressive. If you think you or your partner could benefit from this treatment, I urge you to look into it. There are over 400 Gainswave providers in North America. To learn more, go to drdrew.com/wave. It's that simple. It's my website. Go now, drdrew.com/WAVE. Now back to the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome to This Life Podcast with me, Dr. Drew. And This Life hashtag You Live is a live broadcast today. Mike Carano in studio with us. Mike, welcome.
That could be nerve-wracking.
It could be if we wanted it to be, but we're not going to let it, right?
Well, it's up to the universe.
Well, it's up to you. Today's episode, courtesy of Gainswave and Social CBD. We thanks go out to those guys. We appreciate their support and you guys supporting those products. Go to drdrew.com for all the details. Call number today to be part of the show. We got a bunch of calls lined up, so I'm going to try to get to everybody. It is 636-334-3999. Again, 636-334-3999. And at the end of the show, we're going to have a special preview of a new show that is coming. In other words, at 1 o'clock, we're going to switch to this new show. Stick around for that. We'll give you all the links at drdrew.com. And also, is it drdrew.tv? Go to drdrew.tv for the details and sign up there.
Is the new show Alcohol and Drug Reviews?
No, if you like it to be. Whatever you like it to be, Mike. So, no, it's going to be a live call-in show, sort of like Loveline-esque.
Okay.
So I'll just answer questions. And that's kind of what's happening today, and you're going to help me out with that.
I hope so.
Okay. So how you been?
I've been pretty good.
Yeah.
How have you been?
Busy. I was a crazy eagle.
I saw that. So, people were very surprised. I got texts from people going, you knew about this, right? And I was like, nope.
Nobody knew about it. Susan knew about it, and that was about it.
Yeah. How did you get the costume and stuff? Like, where did you go to try that on?
It's in Glendale. There's a costume
secret
factory,
location.
Secret location.
Now, how does your voice come through that mask?
There's a mesh here, and it's a very sensitive microphone.
Okay.
And weirdly, what I don't understand is why the mic wasn't hitting the... I hit the mesh all the time, and yeah. Mike did not pick that up.
Oh, they may have fixed that in editing.
Maybe.
But was it difficult?
the whole operation.
Was it less nerve-wracking doing it with a costume on?
It was different nerve-wracking.
Yeah. Did you get to pick your costume?
No. Well, sort of. They bring you in there and they ask, they say, give us...
We got a slug costume.
No, we got an eagle costume. They do, but they go, but they first go, give us some thought. Come on with some ideas. And I came in and I was thinking Bald Eagle because I wanted to keep the song sort of in American anthems and Frank Sinatra okay. stuff. And I thought, Bald Eagle. And before I said anything, they said, we're thinking you should be the eagle. Isn't that weird? And I said, fine. But... So I learned all these songs. I had a vocal problem. I had to get retrained. I had a varicose in my vocal cords and a hemorrhage in my cords. All my mid-range was just gone. So I was dealing with all this medical stuff. And then I put the costume on after I learned about 15 songs. And I was like, oh, God damn it. This is a rock and roll character. I have to start over. We have to do rock songs.
Is it possible you were overthinking it?
No, it was clear. In fact, the costume people like were like, this is Jimi Hendrix. Do you understand?
Okay. Okay.
And then the producers are like, do you understand the character is an important part of this? I thought, I got it. We got to start over. Yeah, and so to your point about different nerve-wracking, you have a cloak of invisibility
yeah.
on, right?
Yeah.
So that's fun. And the character kind of pushes you. It kind of drives okay. the whole thing. And that was intense.
Where were your
like, because
arms?
I don't do that. It's nothing I'm familiar with or knew what I was doing or was comfortable with. It was just intense. Was what?
Where were your arms?
I had eagle. I had my wings were under my arms.
But was it flexible and stuff?
Yeah. It kind of okay. had a weird hinge on it, so I could do this. And if you notice when I flap my ears, I kind of do this. So.
Do you want to keep that costume?
No, but one of the producers sat me down. Well, yes, one of the producers sat me down before my performance and goes, I spent so goddamn much money in this costume. You better stick around for a while. I was like, oh, no pressure.
Because it would be cool to go trick-or-treating in that costume and see how many people recognized it.
It would be cool. The costumes, I think, go on tour on their own, like around the world.
Wow.
And they're expensive.
We are desperate for entertainment.
Well, as when Corolla first saw me, he just goes, okay, that's not an American format, right? Some Asian country developed it. They look it up, South Korea.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow. Wow.
Funny? So what's up with you? You want to talk about the film or anything?
No. I want to get right into questions.
Well, first, we got our friend Kat Timpf on the line.
All right.
Let's get Kat up. Kat, of course, you know her on Fox News. And also Tyrus and Timpf, the podcast. And also, sincerely, Kat. Kat, are you there? Uh-oh.
Oh, we've
got to call her. You have to call her?
Oh, no, we're fine. Let me just text her
quick. Oh, my God. You guys are too much. Why don't I take a call? Because
what I really like you to talk about is your time at the White House.
Oh, so I went to the White House.
I saw.
Yeah, that was weird. So I've been pretty upset about the homeless thing, right?
Yeah.
And I know.
Understatement of the year.
Yeah, I know what can be done about it, and it makes me crazy that it's not getting done. So somebody set me up at the White House to go talk to the Domestic Policy Committee, which was like crazy intense, like sitting right next to the Oval Office talking to the people that are directly under the president. It's a weird experience. And they are listening. They're really smart people, and yeah. they are listening. So I think something will happen. I think it is. But it's going to take a little time because not only...
What do you want them to do?
I want them to change the Lantern and Petras Act and expand gravy disabled. I want them to do a FEMA-style emergency. It's an emergency.
Okay.
FEMA-style
okay.
triage.
Specifically for certain cities or for everywhere?
Oh, it's all over Southern California. For sure, I'm worried about Los Angeles and generally, but Seattle, Oregon. I mean, this should be just done. And they should just go city by city. And then the problem is, once they're triaged, then what? And so this is the part I'm kind of working on now. There needs to be psychiatric beds and residential facilities.
Triage means they drive up in a white van.
Triage means come with us, meet with this doctor, let's get a diagnosis and figure out what you need.
Okay.
That's triage. It's assessment and referral. And
now... We discussed this before, but that's probably going to be done with force.
Yeah, like an emergency. Like if this is an emergency, you got to do this, and that's the way it goes. And you got to understand, people who are on the streets, LA Times finally published an article last week that said, oh, we were wrong, 85% of the people on the streets have mental illness or addiction.
Okay, what'd they say before?
29%.
Okay.
And by the way, 85% conservative. That's conservative. It's more like 90-95%. And people that have addiction, think about when you were using. Think about your insight into what was happening.
Oh, yeah. No, it's all jumbled.
Okay.
It's all
so
chaos.
That's what that,
there
right.
is no logic.
There's no insight. There's no logic. And
I know I should be doing this, but this sounds better.
Right. And so at a certain point, if you can't move along or you can't find a place to live, you can't handle your medical problems, we have to step in. That's
okay.
Every other country on earth does that, by the way. Every other country on earth does that. We've decided we don't take care of our sick people. So you have a condition when you're like that called anosognosia. It's the same thing you get from a stroke, where if you have a left-sided stroke, you can literally show the person their hand, it'll flop, and they'll go, I don't know what you're talking about. It blocks insight. Mental illness does the same thing. Blocks insight.
Absolutely.
So think now how you feel about that.
We've all done this, even with just drinking. Midnight. Hey, who wants to drive to Vegas right now? Everybody.
Well, that's just poor judgment.
No, but
that's
I'm saying you're clouded.
Yeah,
you're
clouded. Anosognosia literally blocks your ability to see what's going on. You could say I'm Jesus and I'm seeing angels and I'm hearing God talk to me and could be mutilating myself. And you go, hey, do you see what?
Yeah.
What? I'm talking to Jesus. Relax. They don't see it. It's a block, and that has to be dealt with. That every civilized nation on earth does that. We don't. And part of it's because of the Lantham and Petras Act. That needs to be expanded. We need to expand conservatorship. We need to focus on mental health. And here's the great argument I have with people on homeless. I had an argument with the mayor of Pasadena. He goes, we have 800 homeless people here, and what they need is a place to stay and wraparound services. I said, Mayor, you're focusing on the place to stay. What about the wraparound services? Well, they just need a place to stay. I said, no. And wraparound services. Do you know where you provide wraparound services? You know where that whole concept came from? Psychiatric hospitals.
Okay.
So needing wraparound services defines you as a mental health patient. Defines it. If you have your appendix out, you're not getting wraparound services. Wraparound services means psychologist, chemical dependency counselor, social worker, vocational rehab, physician, psychiatrist. That's wraparound services. That's brain
is disorder. The cost of this just going to be insignificant compared to other stuff we spend money on?
Yes. Okay. They have the money for it, no problem. So, Kat, do we have Kat yet? Is Kat there? Kat Temp, are you there? Kat, I hear you.
Hey.
I hear you, Kat. Meowing.
So here's
the Can you hear me?
I hear you. You're loud and clear. Here's the craziness. So Kat calls me on Wednesday night. She goes, wait a minute. I just got a text. You were dancing around in an eagle costume? And I go, yeah. She goes, no. Wait a minute. Tell me, were you dancing in an eagle costume? I said, yes.
Yeah, you were. Well, I thought it made sense that it was an eagle because you are America's doctor.
So funny. How are you? Look at you. You're on video behind us. It's fantastic.
How did become America's bird?
Oh, hang on to that.
I don't know, but I also thought it was not fair that you didn't get through. Not just not the singing and the dancing, but the pants. The fact that you time traveled all the way back to 1975 to get those bell bottoms.
I know.
Time travel's not getting you through.
Yeah, time travel isn't getting enough credit.
And he hates the 70s.
Yeah. And I hate the 70s. That's right. I wish I'd sung The Doors, something like that. That would have been really more interesting.
You could have. Yeah. That's technically 60s, though. But
yeah.
Did you get to pick your song?
Kind of. That song I'd never heard before and did not pick it. The process of songs. Yeah. The process, and I've never sung anything rock before, so I had to retrain everything on that. But the song selection thing was weird. It was a sort of mystical process. It was not straightforward.
So when you were doing this, was that your move, or was that a move? Was that a move that they gave you?
They have a choreographer that gives all the moves.
I love because you look like you're like a cave.
Here's fun. Here's a funny. Here's a funny. Like
when you did this,
yeah, no, it was all directed. But Kat,
because you look like a caveman at the top of a mountain, like surveying a new bountiful land.
Yeah,
I watched it 3 times.
Yeah,
I watched it 3 times.
Thank you, Kat. I appreciate that. Oh, what was I going to say? I had something actually.
Choreography.
Oh, the way that people guess who's in the costumes is positively bizarre. I mean, for instance, Jenny McCarthy thought it was Adam Carolla or Howard Stern.
What were the hints?
Radio, listening, and that kind of stuff. But two people that will never do that show are those two guys.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
Then my dancer.
I can't imagine Howard Stern doing that.
But check this out. This cracked me up completely. My dancers. I was sort of one of the favorites of the support staff.
Okay.
And my dancers thought I was Barack Obama. I swear to God. I swear to God.
They have such high expectations.
So, isn't that funny? And I have not spoken to anybody.
I know that you're an addiction specialist.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to ask you, as I was watching it, I had an idea maybe for people. If you ever have someone come to you and they're just like super addicted to like peyote, just have them watch that video because it's probably the same.
No,
that's how it felt. It was super psychedelic.
It was
peyote making a comeback.
No, it's in cat's mind.
I think maybe I just did a ton of peyote. I'm not even sure what peyote is, to be honest with you. What is it? I actually don't know.
It's a sort of a cactus derivative. It's got some hallucinogen in it. But here's the deal.
But it's psychedelic,
right? If you were on peyote and then saw that footage, it would blow your mind so severely you'd never do peyote again. that's the point. So
that's how you get people off peyote.
I get you, Kat. So tell me a little bit what's coming up on Sincerely Kat and Tyrus and Timpf.
Well, the new episode that's out right now of Sincerely Kat, we have Sam Roberts from Jim and Sam. Mm. And he's an old buddy of mine, and it's a really great episode. And we have a funny sketch, too, where I help people read between the lines and see what, you know, the thing that someone's saying to them, like what the other person really means.
Oh, my God, I love
that. Next week, we have Gianno Caldwell, my colleague at Fox News.
Hey, what's up
Tyrus
with the
and Timpf just rocking and rolling?
What's up with the
Shepherd Smith? What's up with what?
What do you know about the Shepherd
Smith? Everyone else does.
I look at what's being printed about it, and I know him because I remember when I left HLN, they got that story completely wrong. So I know whatever I'm reading, it's completely wrong. It has nothing to do with whatever happened.
All right. I know. When I got fired from Ruby Tuesday, same thing.
What was your job? Were you a hostess or were you a waitress?
I was a waitress.
Is there any job you?
And I wasn't a good one.
She was a newscaster here in Los Angeles in the helicopter during traffic.
Okay.
And everything Kat has done up to the present moment, she is fired from because she wasn't a good one.
I was fired from that.
Whatever it was, she wasn't a good one.
I was really good. Like they said, my voice was really good. But I kept giving wrong directions. Like I would be sending people into traffic.
You were too ugly for the news.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
No, that's why I have these glasses. Nobody looks ugly in these glasses.
I'm being very facetious.
So
I'm just saying nobody looks ugly in these glasses. They're magic glasses.
So we have a call. Is that for Kat, a call coming up?
No, we have an email that you're going to read, number one.
Okay. All right.
I didn't know that, like, really beautiful people could get fired. I thought that was thing that happened.
Kat, you found a new...
Very beautiful person.
You've got a new fan of Mike Carano. How about that? It's true. So here's a question. All right. The reason I'm writing to you, I'm a reporter at a small CBS affiliate in Twin Falls, Idaho. I hear all the time about the vaping crisis and how vaping needs to stop. I've heard you say repeatedly that vaping is not the issue, nicotine is not the issue, at least when it comes to adults. I'm writing to ask if there's any way I could get either an official statement from you for a 5-minute Skype interview or convenience, blah, blah, blah. Many people here are going back to tobacco products because of the scare on vaping. And to me, that's the worst news of all. Tobacco kills people, not nicotine. Period, end. Now, this young lady is an avid vapor. There she is right now.
Okay.
So what is your thought, Kat, on the whole vaping thing?
Well, I've done a lot of research on it. And the problem is the bootleg THC vapes, not the Juul, not the nicotine vapes. I spoke with a harm reduction researcher who is a doctor in pharmacology with a background in neuroscience as well. Yep. And she said she would be a single case of an illness or a death was due to nicotine because the substance, the problematic substances, such as the vitamin E acetate that are found in the,
the oil,
are for oil only, which you don't need for nicotine to heat it up. So the chemical properties, there would just never be a need for it. And it's just crazy that basically this is all black market stuff. So prohibition is the problem and government's trying to solve it. They're like, great idea, more prohibition.
Yeah. And so
now I have to traffic my mango vapes from New Jersey.
So did you quit smoking and start vaping?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't smoke at all anymore.
So tobacco kills people, period. And in every study I've ever read, vaping is the superior product for stopping tobacco use.
Okay.
And as you know, if somebody gets addicted to nicotine, like gum or patches or anything, we just leave them on the nicotine. It's no problem.
Yeah.
And if you start using tobacco products in your early teen years, it's very unlikely you're ever going to get off nicotine, which is why, by the way, we're worried about people vaping in their teen years. We don't want that. But as adults, if it's
Children, don't do it.
Right. If it's between cigarettes, tobacco, and vaping, you should be vaping. Now, having said that, it's a little more complicated. Now, what Kat just said was absolutely accurate, from my opinion. The government has actually done a really good job looking into this. They've done an exhaustive literature research. It's out there. I've got it on my phone somewhere. I forget the exact website, but they've got a really good website.
Do you think it was prompted by the tobacco industry?
The tobacco industry owns most of the vaping products.
Okay, I didn't know that.
So, and they own most of the, and they're getting into the cannabis thing big. Okay. So don't, you know, whatever. Don't try to think about big gift business here yet, because it's all the same people. But they're going to take over. Big tobacco will be big cannabis. Don't you worry about that. I'm sure. But here's the deal. In this exhaustive literature research, there was only very few conclusions. I mean, it was a really well-done series of – it was sort of a meta-analysis of everything that is out there. A, if you're adolescent, you shouldn't be using it. B, if you're asthmatic, you shouldn't be using it. C, there were two observed problems that remained to be resolved. In fact, there was a study just came out today on rats. Did you see that, Kat? The study on rats?
No.
I've got it on my phone.
I'm assuming
here.
They're not good.
They were not good. It seemed actually
I just did my own study. My conclusion, not good.
Yeah, it seemed actually too not good that I actually don't believe the study. 40 mice exposed to e-cigarettes essentially for a year, 22% developed lung cancer and some bladder lesions. 20 mice exposed to e-cigarettes without nicotine didn't get anything, as though the nicotine is the inciting influence in the cancer. I've never, ever, anybody's ever said that. So this study is sort of suspect to me.
Nicotine's also my best friend, so sorry.
you
wouldn't take a bladder stone for your best friend.
Yeah. Okay, but I will tell you
bladder stone can't tear apart love.
The two, I haven't finished my C point yet, which is there were two observations in the studies that the government reviewed that showed inflammatory lesions in the lung in people using a lot of vape, not the nicotine, just vape per se of all types. And that was concerning for things like emphysema, though we don't know that it necessarily leads to that. And there were some DNA changes in some of the cells of lungs in a petri dish where they were literally blowing vape onto the cells. That makes you think, oh, could this be a problem or not? Maybe your body would repair it quite easily.
Wouldn't that contaminate it, though, if you were blowing vape onto it?
It is all kinds of problems with the kinds of stuff.
Yeah, maybe these people just had gross breath.
Would you quit vaping if you could?
Would I quit? Yeah, probably, but I probably will quit it. You know, like, I don't think I'm going to do this forever. I don't smoke cigarettes anymore, which is good. I did for a while, and I was able to stop doing that. So I'm actually vaping less now than I was before. I used to breathe more Juul than air, and now I'm breathing a lot more air.
Yeah,
like I'm doing it right now.
I noticed that vape thing was hanging out of your mouth all the time when you first started stalking me.
Well, I'm glad you know that it's continuing. So.
So we have a caller now. This is John from Florida. I met John on the Corolla Cruise. We were on the Corolla Cruise last weekend. And John is a vape advocate. John, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, John. We never get to talk on the ship, but we'll talk here. So
wait, how long were you on that ship?
3 or 4 days.
You never found time to talk to John?
They had me busy. They were running around. And there was a lot of people, right, John, wanting to talk.
I was looking out for you, too, the entire time.
Thank you, buddy. So here we are. So you heard what I just said. Do you have anything to add or to push back on anything we've all said?
Well, I only heard what you said. I didn't hear what Kat had said.
Okay. It's an interesting point for our production team. Mm-hmm. But she was just really talking about her own personal experience and that she had talked to essentially a toxicologist.
Harm reduction specialist.
A harm reduction specialist, toxicologist, who was
pharmacologist.
That it's not a, bottom line, it's not a big deal.
Yeah, and I agree as well. I was a 2.5-pack-a-day smoker for about 20 years, and the only way that I could stay stopped was by switching over to electronic nicotine delivery systems. And I don't need a doctor to tell me whether it's good for me or bad for me compared to smoking, because I know how I felt back on August 3rd, 2013, compared to how I feel now being a vapor.
The other thing about vaping I've noticed is that people are seem, for whatever reason, more able to taper down than they can with cigarettes. Have you noticed that as well?
Yes. Yeah. And we only, I also own a retail store, and that's the, there's two different sides to the industry. There is the open system, which I participate in that side of the industry, and the closed systems, which are like the pre-filled pods. And so with the open side of the industry, we actually have a step down program. So somebody can start with, you know, a 36 milligram, go down to a 25, then down to a 12, and slowly but surely get themselves off of nicotine altogether.
Can you send this to Kat Timpf?
Yeah, I need it.
I've never spoken with her.
Well, no, I'm asking for a friend.
And he's but not
is
about that
a big part
to
of
start.
This, the habit.
Oh.
Well, is it something about the behavior you
yeah,
mean?
Yeah. Like,
clearly, right? Because why wasn't the gum or the lozenge just as effective?
Yeah.
I think some of it is, too, the pharmacology of inhaling it through your lungs and the speed with which it gets to your brain. You know what I mean? Because when you have the entire surface area of your lung, it's one pass to your brain. And the lozenge has to goes through your liver and
your blood.
Goes through your blood. Yeah. And it's something to do with all of the above. So what's going to happen, John, to vaping in the current environment? What do you think?
Well, if nothing changes with the current regulatory framework from the FDA, all of the small to medium manufacturers are actually going to get forced out of the industry come May 2020 because of the pre-market tobacco application process. And so they're treating us like big tobacco. And so all of us small manufacturers need big tobacco money in order to go through the process, which is just physically impossible.
Wow. I'm looking at a quote from a professor at UC San Francisco who says, people have been vaping for a long time and we haven't had a problem. It seems to be relatively safe. And that solvent that dissolves them, the question now is when you start messing with the process, what are you adding to it? So in other words, the process, the simple open process that you're talking about seems safe. Would that be accurate?
Oh, yes. Yes.
And then I think this article is about vaping of CBDs. You have any opinion about that?
I don't have any opinion when it comes to the CBD. The current lung issues that are happening, it's clear that that's from black market THC cartridges.
Right.
So and that has nothing to do with our industry.
Right. So from my perspective, Kat, do you know of any nicotine-related incidents that have been reported and have been clearly related to the vape? Yeah, I don't either. I would absolutely stop THC vaping just until we figure out what's going on.
Just because it's not regulated?
Because the cases have all been with THC,
okay.
Even though they were black market THC. Let's just let that work out before we, I mean, just to be responsible. I would throw CBD in the same category just because, again, they're mixing oils and things in terms of how they produce these products. And then nicotine does not seem to be an issue. Now, it again, as I before you came on, John, I was saying the government has this great review out there that shows some inflammatory stuff and some DNA changes and things we have to really pay attention to. But certainly nowhere near the damaging effects of cigarettes.
Yes, and that's what people really have to realize when it comes to the vaping industry is we are harm reduction. We are not harm elimination.
Right.
So there's always going to be risk involved with putting anything into your lungs other than, you know, clean, fresh mountain air.
Right.
And so it does not come risk-free. It is for smokers to make the switch, still be able to get satisfactory levels of nicotine, and just not have the tar, which is what kills people.
Kat, sound about right?
I concur.
Would you like the reduced sort of methodology, the reducing?
Yeah, I should. I had to get a dental procedure done a couple months ago now, and I couldn't vape for 24 hours.
Uh-oh.
And I strapped 5 nicotine patches onto my body, and I didn't feel a thing.
Oh, that's interesting. That's really interesting.
So
all
I'm
right,
quite addicted, physically.
I'm going to say goodbye to John. John, thank you. It was great to talk to you. Thanks for being on that cruise.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right, buddy. There we go. There goes John. And then Kat, I'm going to let you go too. Tell us where we can find you.
Greg Gutfeld show tonight, Fox News, 10 p.m. Sincerely, Kat on Fox Nation, new episodes every Thursday. And then Tyrus and Tim's podcast, new episodes on foxnewspodcast.com every Friday.
Thank you for joining us. I didn't know every had an A in it. Every day.
Nice to meet you, Kat.
Every. You bye, too. Kat. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Mike, any place you want to promote? Anything you want to promote before we go to break?
No.
Okay, we'll take a little break.
That's I'm here just to take calls, man.
It's okay. Mike Ryan. I'm Dr. We'll take a little break. Be right back. Oh, we're staying alive? Okay, we're going to keep. We're going back to the lines now. This is.
I know I'm not supposed to say no when you ask me if I have anything to promote, but
no,
that's
it's
bad
fine.
Etiquette.
I'm not like Corolla who freaks out when somebody says no. No, no is a appropriate response. Oh, my goodness. We have so many calls here. Hang on.
What does nicotine do to your body?
Oh, my gosh. Christy, I want to talk to her. Look at this. I hope this is accurate. Christy, you there?
Yes. Hi, Dr. Drew.
How are you?
I don't know if you remember me. I'm doing wonderful.
Fantastic.
And I just want to tell you, you, almost 14 years ago, you saved my life. And October 25th, I will have 14 years.
Oh, my God. Congratulations.
Because of you helping me.
What just me? Is that whole, that whole, great,
life,
that whole great team we had, Christy? It wasn't just me, right?
Yes. Yeah. And I remember I came in there and I was out for 3 days. I had had a stroke and I woke up and you and Bob Forrest were sitting in front of me and you asked me why. You said, why do you want to be here? And I said, because I don't want to die. And I had seizure patches on me, and there was medications, and I had gone through 8 different rehabs.
Wow.
And I said, you know what? I don't want this. I just want to go to the groups, and I want help. And you called me on so many different things, and I just want to let you know because of you. My life is amazing. Yeah. I have a 7-year-old little boy. And I listen to everything you say, and I still hear the things you told me. And I'm so grateful, and I just want you to know that.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate that.
That's pretty groovy.
It's very groovy. It's
what was your drug of choice?
Crack cocaine.
Wow.
And
that's a big one.
Yeah, it's a tough
and
one.
Then it, yeah, and then right before I decided to shoot up, and then Dr. Drew said to me, you know, I had OD'd, and then he said to me, I want to ask you an honest question. He said, so did you do it again? And I said, I did. 3 hours later, and he said, great, because if you told me you didn't, you'd be a liar.
Wow.
He also, when I was about to leave, he told me, I'm worried, Christy. I'm worried an avalanche is coming. And if you don't really protect yourself and follow through these things, it's not going to happen. And I remember I thought, I'm going to prove him. I'm not going to fail. I'm going to follow through. And I always have done what he told me to do.
What do you do now to keep your sanity?
I'm sorry, what?
What do you do to stay normal?
Stay good.
Well, I have my spiritual foundation. I have my meetings. I have a very good support system. I definitely have 1,000 wonderful women in my life, and I've got the tools. And I still, to this day, when things are hard, I open up, I really do the 12 and 12 book. I'm a very spiritual person. You know, I also always remember to never let secrets keep you sick. So if something's going on with me,
that's a huge one.
I make sure to share it with, that I share it with people that love me. And
yeah, that honesty
because
thing
I know,
is such a big one. It's more about being honest with yourself than with other people. Because
it's just rigorous honesty because you start going down that slope and you don't even realize where the truth is.
It's just embarrassing, though, when you're actually honest and you express your ego and your arrogance and your narcissism and stuff, and it's really difficult.
It is difficult.
You want people to think you're cool.
Yes, you do. Christy, it's so nice of you to call. Thank you so much. Congratulations on everything. You did all the work. I'm just, as some of my patients that like to humble me just say, I just sort of turned you in the right direction and you did all the work and I'm so glad you did. Oh my God.
Yeah. Nice story.
Okay. We got lots of line five. Okay. Claudia?
Hi, Drew. Hey, thanks there for taking my call.
You bet. What's going on?
So, Dr. Drew, I hope you receive what I'm saying because I have thousands of pain patients that are tuning in. Yes, I'm right here. Can you hear me?
I do.
Hi, Drew. So I'm calling on behalf of pain patients who can no longer access opioid therapy. The pendulum is swung, and we are in such a dire situation that we now have a suicide list. And if you're a doctor who's willing to prescribe opioids, you have a target on your back. And if you're a patient who's fortunate enough,
it depends.
Well,
it depends on the state.
Hear me and receive me with compassion.
Hang on, Claudia. It depends on the state. Some states are more. It's easier to give patients opiates than other states. Some states have gone really overboard.
No, that's not true because I actually had to get legislation imposed in Rhode Island. But the grave situation here is I'm advocating for people with cancer who can no longer access opioids because doctors are fearful to prescribe.
That's crazy.
And here's the I think this is probably the cruelest form that's been brought to the pain community. These people have been forced to choose between benzodiazepines or pain medication because we do know the lion's share of overdoses had both.
Yep.
But in 2019, all overdoses had one thing in common, illicit fentanyl. And that's the culprit that our government does not want to give attention to. But people with pain have been deleted from this country. And I think it's wonderful people with addiction have been afforded empathy and compassion and wonderful medications like Suboxone. But in the interim, people with pain have been left homeless. Doctors have been sent to prison. The DEA, in conjunction with medical boards, are making billions off of this crisis.
The DEA.
I didn't ask to be born with Crohn's disease.
All right. So
and
listen. So
when you live with Crohn's disease, this is not
a place for testimonials. I appreciate what you're saying. This will you could obviously say a lot more because it's a complicated topic. I appreciate it. Opioids are for cancer pain. That's what they're for. They are a terrible treatment for chronic pain. That's why doctors do not prescribe it. There is zero evidence. In fact, opioids make chronic pain worse. Now, if you have intermittent pain or you have cancer pain, you should receive opiates. And if you do not, find a doctor who will prescribe it. Most states have exemptions where you can do it. It's just a lot of work for the doctors, and doctors are scared now. And to your point, Claudia, the way we got into this mess was they put doctors in jail for not treating pain aggressively enough. That was in the 90s. There was a lot of that, and fine doctors. And, oh, my God, the stuff we had to go through if we didn't prescribe pain medication, even people in withdrawal, it was the craziest thing you've ever imagined.
What is cancer pain?
Pain from cancer.
But I'm sorry to be so naive about this, but what can you describe it? Is it a...
It's horrible.
Is it a
it's horrible.
Well, your entire body pain?
Well, it depends where the cancer
is. Is it a sharp pain?
Cancer's eating your body, right? And it's like, you know, from the inside.
Because I just learned that pain was associated with cancer. I didn't realize that. I thought
depends
it was just
on the cancer, but most, you know, like a lot of them have bad.
And opioids were developed.
The heavy opioids, fentanyl was developed for that. Yeah.
And then we just abused it because we realized it's fun.
No. Then a group of doctors came out and decided that pain should never exist.
Okay.
And then the Veterans Administration, the Joint Commission on Hospital Accreditation, and the various state medical societies adopted that philosophy that became a theology. And pain became the fifth vital sign, as important as your pulse. And if we didn't treat it, we were fined or sent to jail. And then the drug companies, of course, loved this and pushed it
further. When you say opioids make pain worse.
Opioids make chronic pain worse.
Do you mean the pain receptors won't?
Causes hyperalgesia. So the part of the brain called the insular cortex starts perceiving the pain as much more intense. So the misery of pain goes through the roof.
So you need more drugs.
So you need more, which only makes it worse. It causes back pain and headache from chronic withdrawal. So everybody on opiates has back pain. And then you just escalate this process.
Is that a real pain or is that psychosomatic?
It's all real. Pain is real.
But the back pain and the headache I'm talking about.
It's withdrawal pain.
Okay.
It's all real. But opioids clearly are not the treatment for chronic pain. Every scientific study done has shown that clearly. If you have cancer pain, if you have intermittent pain, and you're not getting opiates, that's just cruel. And the fact that state medical societies or states are getting in the way of that is just anathema.
Can marijuana alleviate cancer pain?
Yeah, it can help it. Yeah.
Just help? It can't make it go away?
Maybe for some people. It's not something we think of as good. Cancer pain is really rough. It's very difficult to treat. And it never really goes away. This is interesting. Alex is a medical student. Alex, you're a medical student?
Yes, I am. I just started at University of South Florida.
Congratulations. Your first year?
Yeah, that's right.
And you wanted to ask about this reality show I was working on?
Yeah, so you mentioned it before, and I haven't heard you talk about it in a long time, so yeah. I was wondering if that's actually in the works. I'd love to see that funny. Kind of show.
Yeah, it's funny. It was Fox was interested in it and then dropped it, and then it sort of went nowhere. Somebody called me yesterday to sort of resurrect it, strangely enough. And it's sort of a reality version of House. And one of the things I'd complained about is that I don't think they're beat up enough. I think medical students, you have to be beat up a lot to make
so
the patient.
So that's a change from when you went to medical school? Yeah. Because from what I hear from you, it was 24/7.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And now they have set hours.
Well, obviously he's watching TV.
What do you mean? Because he's here. He's a first-year student. First-year, second-year is a whole different story. And that's actually a lot of fun, Alex. Enjoy it while you still can.
I'm trying to.
Yeah, when you hit the wards, that's it. Your life is not your own anymore, and it stays that way for many years. And I just don't think – I just think that it's a little too civil. And I got beat up. I beat other people up. And it was the way we, you know, got people to – really? You don't, there's no room for any sort of
contemplation.
Well, I want to say a word like error. It's like we're going to hand these young people prescriptions, pads, and scalpels at the end of the training, and there can be no possibility of somebody not measuring up. I mean, everybody has to.
Do you mean under pressure, or do you mean just
under pressure in terms of prioritizing the patient, in terms of training their mind to think these things through?
How does that being overwhelmed through medical school translate into goodness when you get into a private practice?
You can always prioritize the patient over everything else in your life.
Okay.
And that piece particularly seems to be missed right now.
Okay.
And you can think through in a disciplined way, no matter how tired you are, no matter how angry you are, no matter what the staff is telling you or doing to
you. That is something you can learn. You can train your brain to have that sort of
You can train it.
Path.
You can train. I was not that way at first. I was trained into it. And so I know.
It seems unnatural.
It's unnatural. So, Alex, that was my little philosophy on it. But you get in there in third year, you go back and tell me how it's going, okay?
Yeah, will do. Yeah.
All right, man. Thanks for the call.
You're not going to throw him the. You're not going to make any money unless you go into plastic surgery. line.
No. I want the young physicians to be in medicine for medicine. This is also a really interesting call here. Okay, here we go. Mike, you can help with this. Paul, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi, Paul. What's going on?
Well, I really need some advice. My wife has a drinking problem. I'm sorry?
Yep, I'm here.
That was the dog.
Yeah.
He wants in.
Okay. My wife has a drinking problem. She refuses to do anything about it. I feel like I'm ready to end this relationship, but we have a 6-year-old daughter, so I'm not sure what the best course of action is.
Yeah, it's very, very challenging. Mike, you want to...
I got to say, I've seen this many times with friends,
and
there is no way to deal with it except for ending the relationship, as far as I've seen, because for her to quit drinking, she's got to want to quit drinking.
Right.
If she doesn't want to quit drinking, there's nothing you can really do about it.
Right, and cumulative loss is typically what gets people to change.
Yeah, now, but I also think it's really important that you maintain the relationship with her since you have the tie and the daughter, because eventually she might, maybe 5 years, maybe 10 years, and you don't want to disrupt the kid.
Just cutting them out of your life. You might want to be married in sort of name only and just be there for the child. That's a possibility. But here's something you have to do.
Get her an Uber account.
No. Yeah, for her. But if you're going to maintain this relationship, you've got to go to a program called Al-Anon. You have to get a sponsor.
Okay.
You have to do it. And you're there, being there might motivate her to get sober. It might. Sometimes it does. But it will change how you dance with her condition. You get it?
Okay. Yeah, yeah, I've already... Yeah, I've tried to take a step back. I was still picking up alcohol for her at the store. I don't do that anymore.
No, no, no. But you need to go to Al-Anon to have some support. Like, you ever seen the Little Shop of Horrors?
Yeah.
So the plant, the Audrey 2, that's a perfect model for alcoholism mm-hmm. addiction. If you go in, you go near the plant, you're in the plant, right?
Yeah.
That's exactly right. It's an interpersonal disease. It plays on everything. It plays on all the strengths of the individual that has it. It plays on the relationship that are around it. And so you go in the plant unless you have somebody pulling you out, and that's what Al-Anon is. So you have to have that if you're going to be around, if you're going to be around her. Or you can just leave. I mean, you can just do that. But it seems sad. I hate to think for your daughter.
It's terribly sad, and it's there's nothing.
That's my biggest concern is my daughter's stability.
Sure, and her and your wife, she might get sober one day too. You know, and so it's really, you know, how are you going to manage this? And you can also get a therapist that could be helpful too. It's about taking care of yourself at this point, not focusing on her because she's going to do what she does. Is that about right?
Absolutely. I'm sorry to say it like that, but you can't, especially if he starts to build resentment and starts to be mean to her because she's drinking. That's just going to make it worse.
Oh my goodness, we have so many great questions here. I'm sorry. Okay.
How many lines do you guys have? Holy moly.
I know, it's really extraordinary. And by the way, we appreciate you guys calling in. It's just really overwhelming. And okay. Hold on a second. This is... Okay, Tamara, I'm not going to take your call because I don't want to get into big arguments again, but I will say, she says that opioid-induced hyperalgesia is very limited, addiction rates are low. That is false. It is clearly the case. Clearly the case. In fact, in pain medicine, they still won't even call addiction addiction. They will say, well, 30% of our patients have difficulty managing their opiates, but they're not drug addicts. It's like, listen, the research out there is exquisitely clear. There's a group that gets dependency to opiates without being a drug addict. Can you imagine this? Where we've been overusing opiates so much that we make people look like drug addicts when we take them off the opiates.
I don't understand that at all.
When they come off the opiates, they're not interested in them anymore. Well, a drug addict can't stop. Keeps going back. For whatever reason, keeps going back. While a non-addict...
I'm sorry, that's hilarious.
What?
That's just funny.
That they have to keep going back?
Well, you know all these people that are addicts and how difficult it is, and then you think there's another group of people that are doing it, and then they just stop, and that's the end of it. And you're like, what the hell is
that? We didn't used to see that ever.
That's unbelievable.
But since the opioid crisis, now we see that. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Yeah. So people have to be given a chance to get off the drugs before they need full treatment. We don't even know
if they fall into that category.
Yeah. Well, I think it's pretty easy. You have a family history of alcoholism. Have you ever been addicted to anything? Which, by the way, two questions that pain management never ask their patients, ever. Drives me out of my mind. So, no, whatever you do
that
study you've seen.
I know you've talked about this ad nauseum, but family history will say a lot. I just want to confirm that.
A ton. I've never
treated. So you think it's biological in part?
It's 60%. 60% of 60% of addiction is accounted for on the basis of genetics alone.
Okay.
That's how we say it. Like everything in human behavior, it's genes and environment.
How do you think that played out 1,000 years ago?
What do you mean?
In that lineage, like what?
Where did it come from?
When they didn't have opiates and when they didn't have.
Where'd the genes come from?
No, but was it just alcohol?
No. How about before alcohol?
Yeah. So what did it, just violence?
Yes.
Anger?
Violence. So do you know what the addict, you know, what the genes for alcoholism is?
No.
It's a survivor gene in extreme adversity. So think about alcoholics and addicts. I used to do this.
I've never heard of that.
Well,
that's incredible.
Let me explain this to you. So
a survivor gene extreme adversity.
Okay, so here's the deal. So I used to do this experiment every week with my group of alcoholic addicts, and it never failed. So
why'd you keep doing it then?
To point it out to them.
Oh.
What
kind of doctor are you?
So
what are we doing again?
So you have this gene that's so destructive when people are exposed to these chemicals. Why has it stayed in the genome, right? Why is it stuck around?
Okay.
Why didn't it get washed out? Well, first of all, let's look where in the globe it exists. To look at what is going on genetically, you want to look at isolated populations and see where you see the gene. Well, you see it in Scotland, North American Indians, certain part of Eastern Europe. These concentrated up populations, what did they all have in common?
Well, what we know from, you know, stereotypically,
what they all had in common was multiple generations of military assaults, genocidal military assaults, Scotland being the best example.
Holy moly.
And so if you look at people with this gene now, they make great fighter pilots, great shortstops, great extreme athletes. Think about you.
Which is why so many people in Alcoholics Anonymous have violent upbringings. And
That part I'm not ready to say yet, except to say that you'll find them doing extreme things even still in their sobriety.
Yeah.
They'll like rock climbing and they're like hang gliding and all this stuff. They're at their best in extreme situations, such as if a bunch of Huns ran over the hill here. Well, I, the codependent, would run the other way, and evidently that would mean a spear in the back, while you guys with the gene would have your wits about you and be able to fight and be a little more likely to survive. And you know where that was portrayed accurately? Was in Braveheart. Absolutely accurately. 10,000 people go into battle, only the alcoholics survive. Interesting? And I'm not saying using alcohol.
That's funny you would say that, because that's been portrayed in so many films. There's the vicious guy that TCB Lightning that, you know, takes care of business.
Yeah.
And he's always the guy chugging the grog at the
later,
end of the night.
Later,
he's always drunk.
Yeah. Later. Not during the whole thing, but later you see him start to relate to the alcohol. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
And so if you
now
think
how come you said Scotland, not Ireland?
Oh, you could do Ireland too.
Okay.
Because Scotland is really that's sort of
part
some
of
the same stuff. But you think of your peers. They're all bright, they're all smart, they're interesting people, they're extreme.
Yeah, by and large, yeah.
Yeah, it's a rich genetic population, which is why I started thinking about it back when they first started looking at some of the genes. Some of my peers started going, well, people are advocating maybe doing abortions on babies that have this gene. I thought, whoa, that's genetic engineering. And
trying to bring the music business to a halt, buddy.
And you're taking my patients away from the human genome. That's a major loss. So anyway, so there we go. That's my little story about that.
I've never heard that. That's that was
I can't believe we've
been
friends all this time, and I've never told you my little theory about that. This is Drew in Texas. Drew, what's going on?
Hey, Dr. Drew.
Hey,
how's your day going?
It's going pretty good. We're just doing this
good. Hey.
Live show. Hey, hey.
Ah, I had a question for y'all. I heard you mention this on Dr. Drew After Dark last week. Mm. So I'm 32 years old, and I was recently treated for genital warts. Mm. And I was wondering if somebody like me would benefit from the HPV vaccine.
Are you single?
I'm sorry?
Are you single?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I would do it, dude.
Yes.
They've extended it all the way into the 40s, and I think like 46. And yeah, I mean, because you have one strain of the virus doesn't mean you couldn't get exposed to some of the other ones that could be associated with the cancers. And as you know, head and neck cancer is on the rise, anal cancer is on the rise, penile cancer is on the rise, and it's all HPV related. All head and neck stuff, bad.
Correct.
Should I get that shot?
I would. You're maybe a little, how old are you? Okay, don't tell me.
32. Yeah. 53.
Yeah, get it, Drew. No, for sure. You might find doctors that would give it to you outside of that 46 window, 46-year-old window.
But how would I benefit from that?
You won't get HPV. I'm looking at some producer Susan. I've got a bunch of calls in queue. Are those calls I can go to? Why are they in a separate? Well, they have a. Okay. Okay. I'm doing it. Hold on. My goodness, we have such intense. Okay, this one. All right, Mike, I want you to help me with this. Michelle, what's up?
Hi, Dr. Drew.
Hi, Michelle.
Okay, I'm going to try not to cry.
Okay.
I was in therapy with my 16-year-old daughter yesterday. Mm-hmm. We had been in therapy for a while. She's been suffering from anxiety, depression. We just had her recently tested. She was tested highly gifted, ADD, anxiety, depression. Yesterday, she picked National Coming Out Day, I guess, to tell us that she is trans. She's 16. Her regular therapist immediately gave us a list of other therapists that we could reach out to for transition therapy. This is all brand new to me. I don't even know if I'm using the right language. So it just seems, I talked to a girlfriend who's a pediatrician, and she said that she didn't feel like there was any reason to go to a transition therapist this soon because my daughter's already developed. They wouldn't be like stopping her breast from growing or anything like that.
That's kind of what I was just thinking. I was like, what's wrong with the therapist she's seeing? I think the therapist did that just to be complete and to offer you your daughter that kind of opportunity if that's what she wanted to do. But I think it's better if she stays with a therapist she's connected to for a while and then see what they want to do. This whole issue of pre-pubertal treatment of transition, you know, non-binary kids, trans kids, it's extremely controversial.
Well, and my first thought, and I'm not a parent, is that I made some bad decisions when I was 16, and I think the longer you can wait and the more time you give it, you might change your mind, or you might know for sure.
Right. You need to give her a chance to work with.
Like
the
you don't
therapist.
Go get a big chest tattoo when you're 15, because when you're 25, you might be like, it wasn't.
Or you might then go, finally, I'm going to get that chest tattoo when you're 25.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's all good. That's neither way. We're not saying either way is the way she should go. We're saying that there's no hurry at this point. There is hurry when they're younger because the kids are a lot better if they're treated pre-puberty.
When you know for sure.
When you know for sure.
Okay,
but
yeah.
That's really, really hard and really, really controversial. I've known some male to female trans children, or adult now, who really benefited from
I wonder.
I just don't know how do you select
those
kids.
Is there an advantage to this where you live as a boy or a girl for 14, 15 years and then you transition? Do you get to see both sides? Do you have more of an open mind? Do you have more experience?
Well, we're going to keep taking phone calls after we wrap this life. And let us know if you're a trans individual. It's a really interesting question. But, and Michelle, you should have some place you can go to because, you know, parents get very stressed out about this stuff. They don't want to do, you know, they want to do what's right for their child. And this is sort of new territory for, frankly, everybody, and especially you.
Yeah. Well, it's new for me, too, because you know my friend. You met her at the party. Mm-hmm. You met her before.
I did.
And that was a tough one. It was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You're going to do what?
Yeah, and she seemed great.
And then she did it. Yeah, yeah. I can't speak for them, for other people's.
Right. But if you're a parent, you want children to make the optimal choices.
Yeah.
And you want to
but
do
you
well.
As a doctor can legitimize that this is a real thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know how old-timey, redneck-y people are kind of like, this.
Well, here's the, it's clearly a something. It's always been something. It's clearly something that is manifesting more commonly now. The question is, and this is kind of a weird philosophical question. I'm not going to drop this question at the end, except to say that it's hard to know who we should select for what kinds of treatment. That's the bottom line. We don't really know enough, I don't think.
People will take issue with the we select comment because it seems...
We as clinicians.
Do you approve?
No. How do we select a person for a surgery? How do we select a person for pubertal treatment? How do we select a person for trans therapy like Michelle's daughter? How do we select a person for just individual psychotherapy like her daughter? It's an evolving clinical science still. And it is something new, and it is something that clearly is an improvement, you know, in terms of allowing people to be who they really want to be.
And imagine the kind of turmoil you would be in if you were 60 and you felt like you were the wrong gender.
Right. So, Michelle, thank you for calling. I hope that helps a little bit, does it?
Thank you. I think, I'm just going to help her walk the walk right now,
Stay with that therapist for a little time. Just to give it time with somebody she's connected with and really have her sort it out with that individual that knows her before you go for any kind of specialized care. Again, no hurry. I agree with your pediatrician.
But
friend.
What's going on in her head? Okay. How is she dealing with this? Because that's traumatic to have that laid on you in a therapy session.
I know. And I just said she needs to have her own therapist. Yeah. Too. So, but we got to wrap this thing up. We are going to continue with calls. But this wraps up this live, Mike. Thank you for joining me.
That was fun. Thank you for having me.
It was really good.
I hope I contributed somehow. But
You did. You really did, actually. All right. Thank you for being here. And we'll see you next time.
Hey, Dr. Drew here, and this is just a reminder that the discussions here are not a substitute for medical care or medical evaluation. This is purely for entertainment and education. We hope you learned something, but see your doctor, get proper medical care.